see me rolling. They hating, patrolling, and trying to catch me riding dirty. 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 My music's so loud, I'm swinging. They hoping that they gon' catch me riding dirty. Trying to catch me riding dirty. Trying to catch me riding dirty. Welcome in to the Podium Game Podcast. We haven't done this in a while. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Jared Dubin. Before we get into anything serious, yes, that is Ride and Dirty playing in the background, and that is because Kristaps Porzingis, New York Knicks number 4th pick, has already become a legend.
Yeah, well, you know, he's riding dirty.
Hopefully he doesn't get into a car crash and he gets to actually play in a game. If anyone missed that, it's all over Twitter. I think he posted it on Instagram. He posted a video of himself rapping to Ride and Dirty as he was driving. And then he also let everyone know that his favorite movie is Friday. So he's already taken over Mello as my favorite Nick.
It's not like the highest bar to clear, is it?
I like Mello. I've always liked him, but I guess, yeah, I'm easy to win over when rapping to Ride and Dirty and liking the movie Friday puts you that high on my list. I'm not hard. All right, so this is, as I tried to be funny, and I'm just not funny at all. We can move along from that part and talk basketball now. So we do this every year. I think this is the 4th year we have done this.
I think so, yeah.
And so we do a New York Knicks, usually it's just a free agency podcast, but they actually...
Well, that's only because they never have draft picks.
Yeah, so this time we are going to wrap up what the Knicks did in the draft last night, and then get into an off-season preview of what they should do. This will get pretty extensive. So, as we just talked about, they took Kristaps Porzingis out of Latvia with the number 4 pick in the draft. He's 19 years old, but he'll be 20 before the season ends. He played about, for his team, Sevilla. Is that how you pronounce the name of the team that he played for?
What the fuck
knows that? Yeah, you and I, just with pronouncing things, is just not a good combination of the podcast. We're good at other...
I think it's Sevilla.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
If you're coming here for correct pronunciations of names and teams, you're just in the wrong place. But so he played about 21 minutes for them, 11 points, 5 boards, 1 steal, 1 block, 0.5 assists. His per 36 numbers, 18, 7 boards, 1.7 blocks, 1.5 steals. I like the block and steals number. Those are solid. For me, this pick was a lesson in why sometimes I hate Twitter. Because, look, I'm not afraid to admit it. I kind of zoned in on over this process, and when it came down to the going into the day, the two guys I wanted were either Mario Hezonja or Emmanuel Mudiay. And I was a little bit scared of Porzingis. I saw some of the skills he had that I liked, but there was also some flaws in his game that worried me. So right when the pick was... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you can keep going.
All right, just right when the pick was made, I had an immediate overreaction in a way that I shouldn't have, it as if I gave myself more time and thought it through and had a more well-reasoned response. So sometimes Twitter really sucks because you have instant access.
So this is something I tried to get into last night on Twitter, and it did not go over very well at all, which is like the least surprising thing in the history of man. Basically, what I tried to say was, you know, Porzingis is not necessarily the guy I would have picked. Out of the top 8 guys, I liked him the least, but you know, I'm still perfectly fine with the pick, and especially what the pick says about the way they're going about how they view the team and how they're trying to build. I think it's very clear that it was a best player available pick, but there are different definitions of best player available. Like, clearly with Phil Jackson, his definition of best player available is the guy with the highest upside. You know, somebody else's definition of best player available, including like apparently every single one of my Twitter followers, is the guy that can help them win the most games next year. My definition of best player available isn't either of those. It's the guy whose most likely career path is the best. So, you know, Porzingis' ceiling is like Pau Gasol with more range, say. And his floor is, you know, all-time bust. And he's probably not going to help you win the most games next year. But, like, let's say his most likely path is something like, say, you know, Rashard Lewis with better defense. Winslow's ceiling is probably something like, you know, poor man's Kawhi Leonard. His floor is like, I don't even know what his floor is, but I feel like his most likely career path is a guy who plays really good defense, gets you 12.6 rebounds and 3 assists. Like, and that's a really good player. So the two guys that I probably would pick were Winslow or Willie Cauley-Stein. And, you know, I said that immediately after the pick was made. But I think this shows you, and this is something we talked about on a previous podcast, that, you know, the Knicks should go into the draft and make their pick as if Carmelo doesn't exist. They're so unlikely to be a championship contender in the window of his contract, you know, before, like, the last year of it, that they should just build around the guy they're picking. And I think that picking Porzingis is, like, the clearest way they could have shown that that's what their plan is. Because he's a guy who's, like, exceedingly unlikely to contribute to wins in the first year or two of his career, but has a chance to be really, really, really good if everything works out correctly. And this is something that I just want to add in before we get in there. So the Knicks won 17 games last year. Expecting them to take a guy who was going to help them win a lot more immediately is fucking crazy. Like, there was nobody they could have taken that was going to help them win, like, you know, a bunch more games next year. You know, the history of 17-win teams in the NBA, I have this from a tweet I sent out about a month ago, it's disastrous. So there have been 55 modern-era teams that have won between 14 and 20 games in a full season, like a non-lockout season. They collectively had a winning percentage of 216, which is the equivalent of 17.7 wins in that season. Their collective winning percentage the following season is 332, which is the equivalent of 27 wins. 10 wins is a big jump. Like, that's a lot. But if you look at it, only 5 of the 55 teams finished above 500 the following season. That's 9%. Only 6 of the 55 teams finished with a winning percentage higher than 46%, which is what you needed to get the 8 seed this season. That's 11%. Then, like, if you want to say, okay, well they're good, they can jump more or whatever. So let's say a 24 to 25 win jump is what would get the Knicks to 500 next season. 4 of the 55 teams had a 24 to 25 win jump. That's 7%. Even to get to like 35 wins, like a 17 win jump, 10 of the 55 teams did that. That's 18%. Like, the likelihood of them even getting there is so small that expecting a rookie to be the guy who does that is legitimately insane. Now, here's where people might say that, you know, the Knicks only won 17 games because Melo was hurt. That is also bullshit. They played 52 games before Melo shut it down for the year. They were 10-42 in those games. That's a 15.7 win pace. Now, if you want to say, okay, they were 0-12 in the games Melo didn't play before he shut it down, that means they were 10-30 in the games he played. That's a 20-win pace. They were fucking awful this year. And there are so many roster holes that expecting them to make some leap, not even to, like, title contention, like, expecting the playoffs next year is still asking a lot. Like, it's incredibly likely that no matter who they took, and no matter, like, they only have 26 million in cap fees. It's not like they can go out and sign three superstars this summer. It's incredibly likely they're still going to be bad next year, no matter who they took and no matter who they signed. So being like, oh my god, Porzingis doesn't help you win next year, like, so fucking what? And then you don't have a draft pick next year, so you have to win more. Like, why? You get to keep the pick, you win 35 games. Like, what difference does it make if they give away, you know, the 15th pick instead of the 8th or 9th pick? Like, I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
In addition to everything you said, another aspect of what really grew on me about what they did last night is what it says about the style of play they're going to play. They picked a big man who's not a back-to-the-basket dude. He's a three-point shooter. They ended up getting their hands on a guard. We'll get into Jerry and Grant a little bit more after we wrap up on Porzingis. They got a pick-and-roll-based guard who's built somewhat, he has a wingspan of Eric Bledsoe and Jeff Teague. They got longer, they got more athletic, and they modernized their team. So that stuff is all good also. Now, Porzingis, Pau Gasol, I have a weird comparison for him. What I kind of want to see. I brought this up last night too. How he, a weak side shot blocker, who needs to improve his defense, has shown his jump shot's more developed, and hopefully in time he can develop a little bit more of an off-the-bounce game. That's the one thing I didn't like about the pick at first, was that I wanted the Knicks to get some short. They're desperate for shot creation, and that's not really what Porzingis' game is, at least right now, and who knows if he ever eventually gets there. But with that fourth pick, I wanted them to get a guy who could help them with shot creation. But once they went back and got Jerry and Grant, they addressed that also. So they got the shot creation, and then they got what Porzingis brings. So that made it a more palpable move to me also. That helped me. That helped the move grow on me. But a guy, a shot-blocking wing, a shot-blocking big, who can also space the floor. If he turns into a Serge Ibaka-type player 5 years from now, that'd be fantastic. I don't necessarily know if he's as skilled or as fluid as Pau Gasol is. So I don't know if I see that type of skill development. But if he can do what Serge Ibaka can do, that would be freaking fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I only went with the Pau thing because that was something that Phil brought up in his interview afterward.
That's not just you. I've heard Dirk and Powell from almost everyone, and I don't see it. I see a lot of Serge Ibaka in his game right now.
Right, that's sort of like the ceiling thing that we talked about again, which isn't necessarily, you know, the thing that should be the highest consideration. You know, the likelihood of somebody hitting 100% of their ceiling or 0% of their floor is incredibly low. Like, they're much more likely to fall somewhere in the middle. And I think that's something that gets lost a little bit. You know, people are like, he's Pau Gasol. And then other people are like, he's Bargnani. Like, the likelihood of him following either of those career paths, I think, is pretty small. You know, it's much more likely to land somewhere in the middle. On the shot creation thing, you know, it's a need right now. But if you look at it from the perspective that, you know, they're looking far beyond this year with the pick. Like, there was a post on Nylon Calculus earlier this week about drafting for need versus drafting for fit. Within 3 years, 65% to 80% of the roster is going to have turned over on average. Your needs today are not going to be your needs, like, even before Porzingis or whoever your draft pick might be gets to the end of his rookie contract. That's why you just take the guy you think is the best player. I think it's clear that Phil did that. You know, it's not necessarily the guy that I would have considered the best player because we have a different definition of that concept. But that's much more encouraging to me that was their consideration for the pick than if they had come out and said, you know, we picked Justice Winslow because he was the best fit next to Carmelo.
that they went upside and a big who could shoot threes. I really find it hard how I find it hard to complain about what they've done after my initial stupidity of being salty about
it. It's also, you know, he wasn't their only pick, first of all, which I think is getting lost in a lot of people's discussions of it, just because he was, you know, their highest pick. You know, we'll talk about Grant, but they also got Hernan Gomez, who, I'll be honest, the only time I had heard of him before last night was when he got drafted in the HP mock draft that we did earlier week, and I said, who is that guy? I've never heard of him. But, you know, I watched more Porzingis stuff last morning and watched Hernan Gomez a little bit. This thing, obviously not a lot, but they were on the same team. They played together, Porzingis and Hernan Gomez. And from what I have seen of him, which is not a lot, but, you know, a few different things, he looks like more of a, you know, prototypical back-to-the-basket triangle big man. He looks like he has a couple back-to-the-basket moves and sets good screens, which is something that would fit well. And ACB, the team they played for, they ran a bunch of sets where the two of them would screen for the ball handler together. And, you know, Hernan Gomez would roll to the basket, and then, you know, Porzingis would wait a beat and then pop out to the three-point line. And just the way they interchangeably worked together was interesting, I thought.
Yep, he only played about 19 minutes per game last season, but he averaged 18 and 10 per 36. I agree with you. He seems more like your prototypical big man back to the basket, had a lefty hook, a righty hook, and he's 21 years old. So what I really like, something that I like that Phil's doing is he's gotten criticized a ton for the Tyson trade, which I didn't mind. He traded an expiring contract, but he got young, cheap assets for it. Maybe the Shane Larkin thing didn't work out. But the process behind that trade made sense. So you can argue about Calderon. I get that. That's fine. But he got early. So we're looking at it now. You have the Guillermo. I'm just calling him Guillermo. You have early.
Apparently he goes by Willie.
Yeah, let him, we can call him Willie, yeah.
Which is, like, how strange is it that a guy named Guillermo goes by Willie?
No, yeah, I won't call it strange at all. That works perfectly for me. Willie it is. So we got Willie, we got Giannis, we got Early. I mean, one, and...
Willie, who's the second guy?
Giannis.
Thanasis,
yeah, see, this is...
Oh, I was like... I thought you were saying Giannis, but like...
No. Okay, so they got the Greek dude, they got Willie...
They got the Greek dude, the Latvian dude...
Willie, and what's... And the other dude, they, dude... And who's the guy they bought last year?
Louis Thompson.
Yeah, so if one...
I think it's pronounced...
If one of those guys end up being good, you're... That's great. If... Anything more than one of them ends up being good, that's even better. And if none of them work out, whatever. You took a shot, and you've increased your web of assets in addition to what you have on the 15-man roster. And that this is what smart teams do. Even though they traded ones in 20 and 21, you could always get second-round picks back pretty easily. I'm not overly concerned for trading them for a 21-year-old kid. Yeah, go ahead.
This is from, I think it was Derek Bodner. The Sixers owned the Knicks' second-round pick in 4 straight years.
The only one that bothered, like, trading a second-round pick to get rid of Travis Outlaw bothers the living shit out of me. That annoys me. That's a waste of one. But as long as you're...
No judgment on any of the deals. It's just funny that the Sixers own the Knicks' second-round pick for 4 years in a row.
Yes, it's pretty ridiculous. All right, Jerry and Grant. Number one, if I wasn't at work when that trade broke, I would have chugged a whole bottle of vodka out of happiness. I cannot...
That's interesting, because you went to Michigan, and you hate Notre Dame, I would assume.
No, I didn't go to I didn't go to Michigan.
You didn't go to Michigan?
No, I've just been a Michigan fan since I was like 7 years old.
Where did you go to school?
I went to ASU.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my Michigan fanhood started at a very young age, and I just kind of stuck with it. I lived in Michigan
okay.
when I was
That's
like,
interesting.
Yeah, I lived in Michigan when I was a young kid. I could see why people would think I went to Michigan, though.
I always see you talking to Chris about Michigan, and like I know you're a Michigan fan, so I just assumed that's
yeah.
what happens when you assume.
Yeah, much like
this is you know what I said right after the trade happened. You know, Jerry Grant to Notre Dame, so he's terrible, but it's not exactly like Tim Hardaway isn't terrible himself. So.
I said
this as well. You know, Hardaway was the 24th pick in the draft 2 years ago. He wasn't good in his 2 years in the NBA, and the Knicks traded him for the 19th pick. So not only did they get a better pick out of it, but they also gained 2 years of the rookie scale, potentially.
Yep, and
it's mind-blowing that they were able to get a first-round pick for him.
And Grant's a little bit of an older dude. He's 22 now, but he'll be 23 when the season starts. During his career, he had a 31.9 assist percentage to 14.7. His free throw rate was over 50% the last 2 years. His 3-point percentage dropped, but for his career, he was a 34% 3-point shooter. So I'll look at the three previous seasons when he was successful and take the bigger sample size over the struggles last year. I think he can be a capable 3-point shooter in time. And I would guess he probably ran more pick and roll than any point guard in college basketball last year with how Notre Dame ran their offense. After Moutier and Russell, he was my favorite point guard in this draft. He was someone I've been saying for months, I hope the Knicks could get back into the first round to draft him. I didn't think it was a realistic possibility, and Phil made it happen. I was absolutely ecstatic with this trade.
Yeah, I mean, just independent of the Hardaway part of it, I think it's really interesting that, you know, their two first-round picks are guys where, you know, when you watch them, a lot of their offense was coming out of pick-and-roll. You know, like you said, Jerry Grant might have run more pick-and-roll than anyone in the country. Maybe, like, D'Angelo Russell ran a little bit more. But, you know, Notre Dame is, especially the last couple of years, they're a very heavy, like, spread pick-and-roll team. And, you know, Grant is very good at attacking out of the pick and roll. He gets into the paint. And, you know, other than the way he did it, you know, that's like a very prototypical triangle point guard trait and something that Phil said he really wanted out of a guard that he might get in the draft. So in that respect, I do like the pick. Just because he's a guy who can break down the defense. And not only can he score, but he might have been, you know, outside of Russell, I thought he was, you know, the second or third best passer in the draft. He has really good court vision. You know, whether the jumper comes along, we'll see. But he has really good size. He's 6'5". He can see passing lanes that not a lot of, you know, smaller point guards can. He can play on or off the ball, which is, you know, another thing that the triangle looks for out of guards. And, you know, Fisher said in his press conference this morning that, you know, they're not going to abandon the triangle, but they will keep incorporating, you know, more of the stuff they did at the end of last season to help put guys on the team in a position to succeed. And I think that works well for both Grant and Porzingis, because Porzingis ran a lot of pick and roll and pick and pop in Barcelona, and that was a way that he got a bunch of his shots. So it'll be interesting to see if the two of them can sort of develop chemistry that way. I mean, certainly I hope they can.
He's a guy who I would think, like Porzingis, I'm looking at, I think 14 to 18 minutes off the bench. I'd like to see that. That's kind of a target for me. Grant,
you know,
is someone
also who, something. Just quickly, this is also something I brought up on Twitter last night. Like, Porzingis is 19. He's really skinny. He's not necessarily ready to play NBA defense yet. And I was like, Knicks fans need to be prepared for him not to play a whole lot next year. And, like, people freaked out, took that to mean I think he's going to play, like, 5 minutes a night, which is not really what I meant at all. But, you know, even looking at the then Bobcats won 21 games. They took Cody Zeller at number 4, and he was 21. He still only played 17.3 minutes a game as a rookie in 2013-14. You know, that's the sort of thing I meant.
Yeah, just 14 to, you're looking for to see flashes, 14 to 18 minutes a game off the bench. Phil, this is why free agency exists. You get some mid to, we'll get into that a little bit later, but you add some guys.
I'm not necessarily concerned with what starts or not. Like, that's, you know, whatever. If they want to bring him along and ease him in, whatever. But throwing him out to the Wolves for 30 minutes a night is asking for trouble. Like, and second of all, you know, there have been 8 19-year-old rookies since 2000 that have played 30-plus minutes a game. It's like LeBron, Bosh, Carmelo, Durant, Brad Beal, I'm blanking on the other 3, Kyrie Irving, Wiggins, who was the 8th guy? Hold on, I'm scrolling through to see if I can find it.
Pretty impressive, you got all those off the top of your head.
Yeah, well, I tweeted out the list last night. LeBron, Melo, Dwight, Wiggins, Kyrie, Bosh, Durant, Beal. You'll notice none of those is a 220-pound, 7-foot-1 European big man. So, you know, 30 minutes a night, like, I don't expect that to happen. Like, even last year, there were only 7 rookies that played 25 minutes a game. The year before, there were only 4. So it's important to sort of temper expectations a little bit. You know, even like going up to, you know, 22, 23 minutes a game, that's fine.
Yeah.
He's not a guy where you're expecting him to help you win like 40, 50 games next year. Like, he was drafted to shape the future of the franchise. Not to be your go-to guy immediately. And honestly, there was nobody. They could have drafted Towns, Okafor, Russell, and Porzingis, and they still weren't going to contend next season. Like, people need to get that idea out of their heads.
Yep, and then with Grant, he's someone who I would like to see him start right away. I'd be okay with that. I'd rather
It's going to be interesting to watch. The people who were so gung-ho about Langston Galloway last year, to see how they react to...
I'd play both of them together. That would be...
Yeah, I would be completely okay with that.
And then bring Calderon off the bench. If, depending on what they
do... I don't necessarily know if I see that happening. But, you know...
Well, hopefully... As we transition into free agency talk a little bit, right now, before free agency, I think the first thing Phil should be trying to do is find someone to take on that Calderon contract. That's the first order of business,
like,
right now.
Would have happened during the draft if that was going to happen.
Are you open to stretching him?
He has $15 million left over the next 2 years. So that would mean you'd have $3 million on the books each year for the next 5. I mean, I guess that's fine. You know, it might hurt you in 2016 free agency, 2017 free agency a little bit. I would agree that, you know, they should explore all possible avenues to try to get somebody to take him on.
I would only stretch.
I'm not sure it'll happen.
I would only stretch him in the case they have a couple guys locked in and they need that extra money. Otherwise, I would just keep him around.
Right. It would create, I think, an extra $4 million in cap space this year. Let me double check.
Yeah. So if that's something they needed, go ahead and do it. If it's something that they don't need, just keep him around. Which leads us to the rest of the roster. So right now they...
It would create an extra $4.4 million in cap space this year.
Okay, so maybe that's something
take
that...
from 26 up to 30.
Yeah, maybe that's something they need. Maybe it's something they don't. Basically, if they were able to get a max level free agent, whoever it may be, then you might need that little bit of extra money to create some more room. If they don't get a max level guy and they just go out and sign a bunch of mid-level dudes, then you probably don't need the extra money.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I would agree that, you know, exploring trading him is a good option. He's under contract for two more years, and I think it's very clear at this point the Knicks don't expect to be contenders within that time. So, you know, try to get whatever you can for the asset makes sense.
Yep, exactly. All right, so on this current roster right now, we have Jerry and Grant, Porzingis, Melo, who we need to get into that. We'll do that after we do this real quick. Calderon, Early, and Galloway. So that's what? That's six dudes. Guys from last year, we're going to play a game. Keep them or let them go.
Okay.
Ricky Lito.
Let him go.
Agree. Lance Thomas.
Keep him.
Yep, I'm on the same page. So that puts it at seven. Lou Amundsen.
Depends what you do in free agency, but... if you could get it back for the minimum, keep them.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. With Lance Thomas and Lou Amundsen, they're the perfect guys to fill out the end of your bench.
Right, like as your eighth and ninth men or whatever, you know exactly what they're both going to bring. And if you can get that sort of certainty for the league minimum, why not take it? Don't give them the minimum. But as guys just to fill out the roster, like you need to bring some guys back from last year, like... with $26 million, you can't sign seven free agents. Like, it's just not realistic.
Exact. Travis Ware.
If he can come back for the minimum, fine. I wouldn't be bending over backwards to try to keep him, but I think he's fine.
Indifferent towards him. Again, you need guys to be the 15th man on your team. If they decide they want him to be the 15th man, I don't. It's of no difference to me. Cole Aldridge.
Right. Let him go.
With you. Your boy, Shane Larkin.
For both his sake and ours, just let him go.
Yeah, I think it's a different direction.
There's no room for him on the roster. He's never going to succeed in a triangle context. Like, he needs to play in a pick-and-roll offense that gets up and down the floor so you can use his speed correctly. I love Shane, but... I don't think that this is the right team or context for him to find himself as a player.
Jason Smith.
Let him go.
See, I'd be okay with him at the right price. I kind of liked how he started shooting threes as the season went on, and I think with better players around him, he wouldn't be as much of a disaster, but I'm not spending significant money on him. I'm okay with him as a backup big.
Yeah, like last year they gave him the main level. I wouldn't give him any more than the room exception.
Which is, how much is that?
It's like $2.5 million or something like that, once you spend to within $1 million of the salary cap.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I wouldn't give him $3 million again. That's too much. I would probably do something like, if you would take like $1 million or like 2.5, something like that, I'd do something like that. Alexei Shved.
Get rid of him.
Thank you. I'm on the same page. That people are going to disagree with us on that one. Just we both know that. And then good old Andrea Bargnani.
I'm not even playing.
Okay, so in our world, the Knicks would have at minimum 8 guys, maybe 9 on the roster, which brings us to free agency. But before we hit free agency, Carmelo Anthony. Oh, boy. I mean, we couldn't even, like, I haven't really trusted Phil. I've been really worried. And last night was a good step forward to me, and it gave me some confidence going into free agency, and I was in a pretty good mood. And then Frank Isola and Stephen A. Smith had to, like, not let me enjoy the Knicks for, like, less... I couldn't even get 12 hours in. And we're already stirring... And I'm not saying... By saying stirring up shit, I'm not saying they're incorrect. I completely believe their reports. I have no doubt that this is factually correct. But Carmelo Anthony isn't happy with the direction of the draft. We kind of touched on it earlier. I don't think we both agree whoever they picked at four wasn't really going to make much of a difference in what they were going to do from a win total perspective this season. I think there's the possibility if they get some guys in free agency, this could blow over pretty quickly and it not end up being a big deal at all. I also think this could be the start of Phil Jackson looking to trade Carmelo Anthony. I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see. We're going to have to wait till how free agency plays out to see what direction it goes.
This makes me think of a few things. You know, first of all, like we said earlier on the podcast, like we had discussed on previous podcasts, the best way to approach the draft as if Melo didn't exist and build around the guy that you draft. Because it was very unlikely that they were going to be true contenders before like the last year or two of Carmelo's contract, at which point he'd be 34, 35 years old. It also makes me think of, and this is something that nobody has brought up, I don't think, yet. Immediately after the news was broken that Melo was re-signing with the Knicks, Woj tweeted out that his camp was just like, let's get the money now, and if we want to force a trade later, we could always do that. And I literally just thought of that as we were recording this podcast. I don't remember what the exact... tweet from Woj was, but it was something to that effect. And if he's frustrated with the direction of the franchise and doesn't want to wait for Porzingis to be good, which is totally understandable, by the way, like he's getting older and he should want to win, then ask him to waive his no-trade clause and try to, you know, recoup some of the value for him in the form of other assets. That said, I love Melo. He's a great player, and in all of my interactions with him in the locker room, you know, they've all come, you know, within the scrum setting, but he's never been anything but professional, courteous, respectful, incredibly nice person, and, you know, just from, you know, the way he conducts himself, you know, other than taking a million years to get out of the shower and whatever.
He's got to get that cocoa butter on his arms.
Right. he's such a nice person, and I wish nothing but the best for him in his life and in his basketball career. But he's shown sort of very little awareness of, you know, the way team building works. In the two instances of, you know, the way he came to New York and came back to New York. You know, he wanted to be on the Knicks and he wanted to win, yet he forced a trade before the lockout so he could get as much money as possible on his contract. I'll never begrudge anybody wanting to get as much money as possible. You know, do you, man. Like,
then sure. That's a typical Knicks thing, that it shit just worked out badly because of timing. Like, if there was no luck at...
If he wanted to be on the Knicks and win, he should have just, like, right away, he should have just waited until after the lockout, because then he would have had more guys around him. The Knicks wouldn't have depleted their asset trove in terms of, you know, both surrounding him with good players and, you know, pursuing trades and draft picks and stock the roster around him. And then last summer, he re-signed with a 37-win team that had just traded its only consistently above-average defensive player. And then expected to be able to win right away. Like, there's this disconnect between, you know, sort of the actions he's taking as it regards, you know, being on the Knicks, and what he wants to do.
And it might just be best at this point if they part ways. It just might be two different timelines, and I don't begrudge him at all. I'm very grateful for what he's done for this team. They had some good years. The 12-13 was the most fun I've had with the basketball team in 15 years, and that doesn't happen without him here. So it's just, if it's best for both parties to go their separate directions, it's best for both parties to go in their separate directions.
I don't want the Knicks to trade him. Like, I'm not saying, get him out of here. You know?
No, it might be the logical thing. Believe me, I would much rather him be around.
I'm not saying, like, the Knicks need... All I'm saying is, I'm not saying the Knicks need to trade Carmelo. Like, but if he's so frustrated with the direction of the franchise that he's unwilling, to wait, like he said last summer, I'm willing to be patient, but how patient I'm willing to be, we'll see, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
If he's not patient enough to wait, then ask him if he'll waive his no-trade clause. You know, the more concerning thing to me about, you know, his reported comments are that he thought Tim Hardaway Jr. was going to help him win now. So, you know, whatever.
That's enough on that. We got a ton of free agency stuff to get into. And as we were doing this, a report broke that Jimmy Butler might try and be a pain in the ass to the Bulls, which brings us to the first two. These are the first two calls I would make during free agency. And this is something I flipped on. Originally, I wasn't into DeAndre Jordan because I really, really despise people who can't make free throws. It's really freaking annoying. But I think DeAndre Jordan and then Jimmy Butler would be my first two calls during free agency. I don't think Butler leaves the Bulls, but out of all of these restricted free agent guys, if there's one who that has the, out of a small percentage possibility, the one who's most likely to see something weird happen because of how the Bulls are run, I would think it would be Jimmy Butler. So those would be my two, like, high-level dart throws.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. For me, I don't so much have specific targets in mind in terms of players as I do specific skill sets.
Yeah, but I mean, at a point, you have to go and sign someone, and you have to pick out a guy you want to try and go after.
Sure, but, that's for Phil and Steve Mills and whoever to decide. But for me now, I think one thing I would add is that there should be a certain age group that they're looking at, too. Based on the way they drafted, Porzingis is 19, Jerry Grant's 22. Like, their window to contend, I think, opens sort of when Porzingis is approaching the end of his rookie contract, I would say, is the time they should be preparing themselves to be, like, true contenders. So you should get guys who will be, sort of entering their prime at that point. So you should be looking for guys that are 25, 26, or younger in free agency. Not guys that are, 28, 30, 31, because you want guys that will still be either in their prime or improving by the time you're getting ready to really win, not guys where you're paying for their decline years now, and then by the time you're ready to really win, they're, already through their decline.
I would go a little bit high. I think I'd be okay with maybe 26, 27, and then 3 years from now they're 30, 31. I don't think that would be the end of the world. I think you want to balance out the roster a little bit with some experience and some guys who know how to play. And because I saw what happened with the Suns this year and how that worked, just having a team just all of young kids, and it wasn't very good. So I do think you need a little bit.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying sign only 20-year-old guys.
Yeah, I get you. And but Dave,
25, 26, it's young, but they're not kids. Like DeAndre Jordan was 26.
Dave, for example, Dave, David West makes absolutely no sense for this roster, and the rumor surrounding him is...
Talk as much as you want about how he's such a great locker room guy and leader and whatever, that's terrific. So was Chauncey Billups, and he just wasn't that good at basketball anymore, so it didn't matter.
I can't reiterate enough, signing David West would be one of the stupidest fucking things they could do. This
but also,
summer.
You know, it doesn't matter. Like, if you sign David West to a 2-year, $20 million deal, like, who gives a shit? By the time that deal's over, Porzingis is first going to be ready to really contribute at that point.
I'd rather try and find guys that, for $10 million, that could contribute and grow with this team long-term.
Right, that's exactly where I was going next. It's just better to try to find guys who can grow with it. Like, you know, we said it about the draft pick, it should apply to free agency too. They should be thinking about guys who can fit with Porzingis and Grant and the Nassis and Early and that crew and grow along with them. You know, young veterans, not old guys who are going to provide leadership. Like, sure, sign some of those guys that fill out the back half of the roster, but not like... Your concern with the guys that you're targeting to actually play real minutes should be guys who are going to get better over the course of their deals, not guys who are approaching the end of their career.
And so once Jimmy Butler isn't a realistic possibility, which would happen pretty quickly, I imagine, for me, I want the Knicks, I'm not overly picky about which one, but one of Danny Green, Wesley Matthews, or Damari Carroll I want to see in a Knicks uniform. Those are my
Danny Green, to me, I said this on Twitter, that is the one guy, like, if there's one guy the Knicks can sign, that would be the guy.
See, I'm the opposite. I actually think I would rather Carroll because he's a little bit more versatile offensively. But I'm perfectly fine with either. I'm not complaining. It's just we just have a little bit of a difference on preference.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've said multiple times I have no interest in buying at the top of the Damari Carroll market. That's a guy you could have got off the street for $2 million 2 years ago. And, you know, the same is somewhat true of Danny Green, where he signed for nothing 5 years ago. But he's younger. He's a better shooter.
Carroll's played less minutes in the NBA than him, though. That is, and they're really not that far off in age. It's pretty similar. It's only a year difference, I think. Green is 28, just turned 28, and Carroll is going to be 29. So they're basically exactly a year apart. So the age difference isn't that much, and they're both guys who don't have, neither of them have, Green's at like almost 8,000 minutes, and Carroll's at around 7. So I think even though they're a little bit older than maybe the 25, 26-year-old, they haven't even crossed 10,000 minutes yet. So they're young guys for their age, both of them. So that I'm kind of cool with that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, we're thinking the same kind of thing, but just have a different preference within that.
Yeah, and then I think Wesley Matthews is honestly better than both of them. He's going to be 29, but he's coming off an injury.
And it's not just any injury. It's an injury that has killed the careers of everybody who's ever had it.
And he's
a little bit of a different player than most, if not all of those guys, in that he doesn't really depend on athleticism at all for his game. He's like a spot-up shooter and post-up guy on offense, and sort of like a strong defender on defense, not necessarily the guy who's, like, he does have mobility, but he's not a guy who depends on his mobility to play the defense. So it'll be interesting with him to see how the Achilles affects him. But he's also said in the media he's looking for like $15 million a year on his contract. So I don't know if I'd go that high.
And
like I think I would have, pre-injury, I would have been comfortable with that. But that might be a little much.
And he's also played double the minutes in his career than Green and Carroll. So they're the same age, but he's about 7,000 more minutes on the tires than both of them.
Right.
So I lean towards one of Carrick.
He's also a better player with more of a track record than both of them.
Yes, absolutely. But I think you could probably get Green and Carroll a little bit cheaper, and I'd rather go that route and not have to worry about the injury stuff and have those guys. And even though they're the same age, I think they might last a little less wear and tear, could last a little, play at a higher level later into their careers. So I think, but any of the three I'd be cool with. I want one. I don't think it's unrealistic to get one of those three guys.
Yeah, I mean, those are all good targets.
Point guard. What's good is, what I really liked about Jerami and Grant is, point guard was going to be a pain in the butt to upgrade. They either were going to have to wait for it until next year, just go with Calderon, or overpay a guy like Reggie Jackson or Brandon Knight or Goran Dragic. And now they don't have to do that. I'm not against adding another one into the mix. Two got C.J. Watson on like a really cheap deal would be someone I'd be interested in. And then Corey Joseph, restricted free agent, only 24 years old, last season played over 1,000 minutes for the first time in his career, but and was pretty successful. He would be someone I would really take a long look at if you could get him for around $4 or $5 million.
Corey Joseph was the one guy I was going to talk about at point guard. That's pretty funny.
It's illogical. Why do you like him, though?
It's in the kind of age group that you're looking at. He's shown the ability to play on and off the ball. And pretty decent shooter. Long arms. You know, it's sort of everything that I would be looking for in a point guard signing, and as long as it didn't get too expensive, I would be into it.
Yeah, I like that as a cheap option too. Outside of that, I think Patrick Beverley is going to go for a little too much.
I think he's going to go for too much money. Plus, like, you just drafted Grant, and I'm not sure. You know, you want to have two point guards that aren't great outside shooters.
Yeah, I don't think he was someone before the Grant pick that I would have been interested in, but after that, I'm not. Jameer Nelson on like a 1-year vet minimum contract would be someone I'd be open to coming off the bench.
Right, but I think that Jameer Nelson's going to get more than that.
Yeah, then I'm not paying him anything real.
I don't think he's a guy that can be at the minimum. Is basically what I'm saying.
Okay, cool. All right, now moving to wings and some other wings. The guy I'm terrified is going to end up in a Knicks uniform is Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Oof, I'm
I mean, look at what they did in the draft last night. Like,
yeah, and hopefully they stay along.
Does that connect in any way to a Dwayne Wade signing?
But there's the same thing with David West. That doesn't connect either, but there's rumors all around that they're... So, I mean...
I mean, two guys that said something, and even with Alan Hahn, he was less saying that the Knicks are interested than he was that he likes the fit because of his leadership.
But he also said there was mutual interest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I mean, mutual interest, who gives a shit?
So, yeah, like...
I do have some wing guys that I think would be interesting, though.
So,
let me just
finish off the no's. Two no's, Wade and Monta Ellis. No.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not all that interested in Monta Ellis.
Yep. All right. So now let's throw out some names.
I have another guy to add to the no list, but you know, mostly because of price, is Tobias Harris. I think you're going to have to give him too much money to take him away from Orlando, and I'm just not interested in doing that at all.
Agree completely.
A couple guys that I like a lot. One of them, I don't think there's really any chance, is Chris Middleton. You know, from everything coming out of the Bucks, it seems like they really want to keep him, which makes sense.
I would have included him. I was going to say, I would have included him in that first group, but I just tossed it away because I don't think it's a possibility anymore.
Right, like that's a guy I really like. And then another one, I think, sort of a lower end that you could potentially get up because of the cap situation his team is in, is Justin Holiday. Drew's brother played for the Warriors this year. Didn't play much, but when he did get minutes, he showed a bunch of flashes of being a very nice 3-and-D guy. He has really long arms, moves his feet well, and is a really good shooter. He's 26. I think that would be, if you could steal him away for a few million dollars a year, that would be a very nice move.
You probably don't remember, I brought his name up on the Free Agency podcast last year because I watched him in Summer League, and I have friends who are Washington fans. So I watched a ton of him in college, too. He's a guy I really like and I think can be a role player on a good team.
I think that I probably hated it last year, if I'm remembering correctly. But that just goes to show you what the fuck do I know.
No, I think you were just honest. You basically said you didn't know much about him.
Yeah, like I didn't know if he could be an NBA player. And yeah. I think this year he showed in the short minutes that he was given that he can. And I think that would be an interesting guy to fill out the back end of the rotation.
Agree. I would really like that signing. What about Jay Crowder? I don't think so.
I think that's another guy that you're going to have to pay him too much for Boston to let him go. Because he's restricted too.
Yep. Two other restricteds that would interest me, Joe Ingles and KJ McDaniels.
Yeah, I mean, KJ, I think, is another guy you're going to have to give him a little bit too much money. Just because he had, like, so much hype around him last year. We'll see, you know?
And then Al-Farouq Aminu would be a good one. I don't know. I'd pay a little bit for him, too.
Yeah, I like Aminu, for sure.
Corey Brewer was in the mix there. And then, obviously, I mean, Draymond Green, but he was kind of in the Chris Middleton
category. Yeah, that's not happy.
All right, so that's a good chunk of guys there. Power forwards. I'm still on the same page. If Kevin Love and LaMarcus Aldridge, no go. Pretty much, there's three guys. Kevin Love, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Greg Monroe. If Carmelo Anthony is on the team, I want nothing to do with them. If they trade Carmelo Anthony, I'm all for signing any of the three.
The Monroe thing is really interesting because, like you said, he doesn't make any sense with Carmelo. You know, we've talked about this ad nauseum. I've tweeted about it way too much. I put up a thing on, what's that site where you, like, curate tweets and make them into, like,
Storify.
Yeah, I put up a thing on Storify about, like, all my Greg Monroe thoughts on why it makes no sense with Carmelo. He makes significantly more sense, I think, with Porzingis.
It'd be
at least on offense, you know, in terms of Monroe on the block and Porzingis is like the weak side two-man game guy. But I think still defensively, at least early on in his career, Porzingis needs a guy who's like a better help defender and can offer more rim protection next to him as a front court partner. You know, like maybe eventually he can be sort of he can swing to center. But, you know, he said at his press conference this morning, he's going to need some front court help defensively for at least the next few years, and Monroe cannot provide that. He just can't.
But if we're if Melo's not in the mix and we're taking a long-term view, Monroe's only 25, so 3 years from now he'd be 28. And hopefully,
right, and just entering his physical prime.
Yeah, and hopefully by then Porzingis is ready to provide the rim protection you need to play with Monroe, along with being the good complement on offense. I can't
right.
lie. As someone who has said I want nothing to do with Monroe, if Melo is not a part of this team the next 4 years and they're going to get rid of him, and the drafting of Porzingis makes me really open to signing Monroe when I wasn't originally.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I still wouldn't like it just because I think that as, like, a power forward, if you can't face the floor or play defense, I'm still not into that very much. I think Monroe would make a lot of sense. Like, if LaMarcus Aldridge leaves Portland, I think he would make a ton of sense there if they kept the rest of their guys. But I'm just not... It's not a skill set that I value all that much.
You need 3-point shooting at the other position. That's why I'm a little bit more open to it if Porzingis can really hit NBA threes. In most cases, it's just how parts fit together.
Yeah, no, it's just a skill set that I don't value that much. Is the one, his skill set that's, and I wouldn't want to pay a max contract for it.
No, I'm still at that point with you. I don't want to give him 4 years what it would be, like $65, $60 million.
No, it's more than that, I think.
Ugh, yeah, okay. That I don't want to do, but on a reasonable deal, I'm more open to... He's still not my first choice, but I'm definitely more open to it now than I was.
Like, as an example, I would rather sign Greg Monroe for 4 years and $40 million than David West for 2 years and $16 million.
You were saying you'd rather Monroe, right?
Monroe for $40 million. What's that?
You said you'd rather Monroe, right?
Yes, but I don't think you can get Greg Monroe for 4 years and $40 million.
No, I'm with you. So, I mean, Monroe, I think we're both pretty much on the same page there. That it makes more sense than it did, but he still wouldn't be the top choice, especially at the price they would have to pay to get him. Love Aldridge, I mean, pretty simple. If you can get them and you trade Melo, sure, go right ahead. I don't think it's a realistic option. But if Melo's in the mix, I want nothing to do with them.
Right. I still, like, Kevin Love, I sort of disagree with you. I think Kevin Love is, when used, I don't want to say he was used incorrectly in Cleveland, because he was used correctly in the context of that team to help them be as good as they could have been, but not to maximize his production. But if you on the right team that was utilized to maximize his production, he's one of the 10 best players in the league. And I think that he would have ample opportunity to both post up and work from the elbows and shoot threes if he came to the Knicks, and I'd be fine with it. And he would outlast Carmelo in terms of his career in New York if they did sign him. But I'm thinking more about lower-end guys in terms of front-court signings. I have a few guys I like. These are all guys that you're not going to pay big money to. I like Kyle O'Quinn.
Yep.
I like Brandon Wright.
I think Wright might get a little too pricey, to be honest.
Yeah, he could. I like Darrell Arthur.
Yes.
I like Amir Johnson.
Injuries worry me a little there.
I had a couple more. Give me a second.
Jonas Drepko.
Not as much.
I think Arthur would be my favorite. Honestly, would be my favorite out of the ones you listed. I would absolutely love him as the first big off the bench.
Yeah, I think that would be good. And then I really like Robin Lopez and Costa Kufis.
Those are the two for me. Lopez and Kufis are the two guys that I'd be willing to spend upwards of around $10 million after they swing and miss on DeAndre Jordan. Like, my summer is coming away with one of Kufis and Lopez and one of the three wings, and I am very content as those being the two big money signings.
Yeah, I would agree. If they came away with one of those two centers and one of those wings we talked about earlier, I would be very happy.
And then, like, a lineup of Lopez or Kufis, Melo at the four, one of the wings at the three, Galloway and Jerry and Grant, that'd be kind of a fun team.
Yeah, it definitely would be fun. And I think that they should sign Thanasis to the team this year.
Yeah, and then
he can be an interesting guy to fill out the rotation as sort of like a defense and energy guy off the bench. 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is, and if he turns out to be more than that, terrific.
And then say you have, like, I think you could probably, C.J. Watson's never gotten more than $2 or $3 million. Say you got Watson as a point guard, you had Watson and Calderon, Darrell Arthur, Porzingis, and who's one other realistic guy on a cheap deal we could add into the mix there?
In the front court or the wing or the back court?
I think Jeff, and how about like Jeff Withey?
Sure. I have no strong feelings about Jeff Withey one way or the other.
I liked him coming out of college. I
remember that. I remember when we did the podcast, whenever it was, 2 or 3 years ago, and you were into him.
Yeah, I wanted to draft him instead of Timmy. I think he has shot-blocking ability, and for some, I don't know what happened in New Orleans, but...
I think they just have what their big guys...
Yeah.
That they like better than
him. And he just never got a chance. He's someone who I would like to see get 10 to 12 minutes a night on the regular. I still think in what this league values...
I have no strong feelings one way or the other about him.
Yeah, so I think you can build that. And that could be that... If they put together a team like that, I think that's a 30 to 35 win team that you might be in the mix for the 8. I'm not get the 8th seed, but... You're playing some meaningful games late into the season, and it'd be fun. And then you have the cap space the year after. You show that you're competent with that roster. And then the next year, you hope you can get that guy that kind of start, and you start pushing your way towards contention.
Yeah, I think, you know, the goal should be when Porzingis is coming off his rookie contract, you want to be contending. Not necessarily like an inner circle title contender, but a solid playoff team that's getting better. Sort of like where the Wizards are right
now. Yeah. So
it's not necessarily like with their older guys, I just mean where they were a middle tier East playoff team that won a round and is getting better with three guys who look like they're gonna be sort of cornerstone players for a while.
I'm not going to lie. I would like to see the 30 wins next year if they make the right signings in free agency. And I don't think it's... Look, is it likely? No. Do I think it's completely unrealistic? No. I think it could go...
It's not completely unrealistic. It's just not, like, the most likely thing that's going to happen. Although, you know, like, again, the average of... You know, 17-ish win teams in the past to win 27 games the next year.
Yeah, which I wouldn't.
That's a 10-win jump.
Yeah, and I'm not a person who's going to be mad if that's all that happens. I'm fine with that as long
as. But again, a 16 to 17 win jump, which would get you to 33 or 34 wins. Only 10 of the 55 teams that have won between 14 and 20 games in the full season have done that. That's 18%. Of those super horrible teams. You know, maybe they can be, you know, an inner circle top 20% of that group because they do have Carmelo and they do have $26 million in cap space.
So it's possible. If they get the right guys.
It's not the most likely thing.
Yeah,
the most likely thing is that they're still not very good next year. And you know what? Like, they already traded the draft pick. Like, trying to win 35 games just because that happened, like, by all means, if you win 35 games, that is terrific. That means you got a lot better in 1 year.
You have to do it without doing anything that negatively impacts your future. It has to come naturally. It has to come signing guys that make sense and are logical and not going all in on what... I'm not going, like, all in on what this year is. And I have confidence...
But, like, if you win 40 games by signing David West and Dwayne Wade, that does absolutely nothing.
I just puked in my mouth.
Like, that does nothing.
No, but winning 35 games signing Robin Lopez and Danny Green would be freaking awesome.
Right. Because those are guys who are still young and they can contribute both right now and in the future.
Would
and even once Porzingis grows, they'll be 30. And, you know, yes, they'll be declining at that point, but they won't be either falling off a cliff or out of the league like David West and Dwayne Wade were.
Would you, if you had your choice between Kufis or Lopez, which one would you go?
Lopez is better, but he'll also be more expensive. I think I would still lean Lopez, though, because I think he's more able to carry a higher minute load.
Kufis has never really had the chance. The most he's played was 21 minutes. I think Lopez played about 27
right.
last year.
Lopez is also more skilled offensively. You know, he's not a prototypical triangle big man by any means, but he's a craftier passer and has like a little bit more of a jumper than Kufis does too.
Agree. I think I agree with you. I would go Lopez over Kufis too. I think we hit everything.
Even if it's $3 or $4 million a year more expensive, I think that's probably worth it.
Yeah, that's fine. That's nothing. Like if you have to pay him 11 instead of Kufis 8, that's cool. I'm good with that. We're good here, I think. I think we covered everything pretty in-depthly, as usual.
Yeah.
Anything else you got to add? You want to get out there that you did? Do you write anything draft night or anything like that?
I didn't write anything off of draft night. I do have, you know, I have all my NFL stuff at CBS. Basketball-wise, check out the HB Basketball Network. Check out everything at Hardwood Paroxysm. And then, you know, personally, I have this Max Contract series I've been working on at Bleacher Report. And then I'll also have sort of a mega free agency preview at the Cauldron next week.
All right, cool stuff. We'll definitely be reading that. And that wraps up the Knicks draft and free agency edition of the Podium Game Podcast.